Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And how do you feel about death? Isn't that a crazy question to ask? Don't we all feel terrible about it? And it, for good reason. Not a fun subject. Not a good thing to die. But there's a lot we don't know that we could learn about dying and the death process and what goes on after that that might make it a lot easier to live with ourselves and to live with the whole process among each other. And so to help us understand this is a friend of mine who I'm going to interview for this show, who's been on the show before, and she's a medium. She can actually speak to the dead. And I like that. And there are times I have as well. I'm not a medium, but it's not my specialty. But I know that there is communication with those beyond, and I've been able to do it. It's more that I communicate with them through my guides. My guides are able to speak to them, and then they convey messages to me, so I don't really have direct communication. But mediums do. And we're going to talk with our guest about the death process and what it means to have died and what's that like, what's on the other side, what do we expect. Maybe we shouldn't be so afraid of death. We might not like it, but maybe there are qualities to it that enhance our soul and the souls of others. We'll find out. I don't want to be airy-fairy about it. I've had some terrible tragedies in my family and tremendous grief, and I understand how hard it is to deal with dying and those who've died, and it's always good to have a better perspective on it. So, Karen Francis, I'm so glad that you can talk with us.
Thank you, Peter.
So we can have a better perspective.
Yes, and I think what you've said is quite interesting. We go through our lives knowing at some point that it's going to end. And I often think, you know, for something so massive as the idea of death, of what we, a lot of us think is like the end of us, that we don't actually really remember. Do you remember the first time you heard that you were going to die? When do you think you would remember that?
I think it wasn't so much about me dying as the fear of my parents dying. And I know a lot of children, and my children have been through it, that at some point when they're young, 6, 7 years old, they realize, oh my God, my parents will die at some point, and they could die tomorrow.
But the moment when you realize, there you are, you're happy and you're Peter and you're a little kid and you're wandering around and you think life is just glorious.
Until you learn about death.
And then all of a sudden you learn there's this thing called death.
Well, you see little animals dying, you know, pets might die. But I'll tell you one experience I had was one night I was home alone with my younger son, and he was about 6, 7 years old, and he was having trouble going to sleep. And I said, what's the matter? He said, well, I'm afraid that when I wake up in the morning and come to see you in the morning, that you'll be in bed dead, that it'll just be your body. And I'll freak out. I won't know what to do because I'm home alone with you and your dead body. And I'll just go crazy. And I my only response is, I don't think I'm going to die tonight. It could happen, but let's expect it not to. But let me tell you that if you wake up in the morning and you see my dead body, just know that I'm not in my body. I'll very likely be sitting with you, holding you, and helping you feel better if I could.
Mm. Well, I guess the reason why I've often been curious about why isn't it just this, like, you know, oh, holy God moment, there's such a thing as death. Because you would think that just that moment of realization would be such a shock to us, you know, because when somebody dies is such a shock, you think the knowledge of death would be such a shock, that I actually wonder if it's because we're on some level born knowing that this is temporary, that this will end, you know.
Interesting.
I've never remembered. I could not pinpoint the time I first became aware that things die, you know, that there is an end to what was around us. Anyway, it's just always been interesting to me, so I often wondered if the soul comes into the world knowing it's going to go out of the world as well, you know.
Well, I think there's a lot of unconscious awareness that psyches have about who we really are. Because our unconscious really knows so much more than our conscious mind.
Absolutely.
And so we're running on a program where we're only allowed to know so much consciously. Mm-hmm. But there are themes, and that's why we react the way we do when, as we were young and growing into life and seeing things that frighten us, because we really do know a bigger picture.
Yeah, and children, it's very common for children to have little conversations with, you know, spirits. I know when I was the child, I would wake up and when I was very small, I would have conversations with strange people, and my mother would ask me, who are you talking to? And I would tell her the name of somebody who was two or three generations dead who I'd never heard of, and give her the name. And I was like 3 years old at the time, so of course freaked her out completely. And I do remember, you know, when I was a little bit older, I would wake up in the middle of the night and there'd be just some person standing by the bed, you know. And it was odd because it never bothered me. I remember just waking up and thinking, well, I don't know you, so don't know what to say, you know.
And a stranger in your midst.
And I would know that they weren't like alive in the body sense of alive. I knew that they were like spirits. But I would just be like, but I still don't know you. So I would go back to sleep. But people often say, did that not? God, that would scare the living daylights out of me. And I never did. Because I think on some level, because we are a spirit incarnate, that we can, it's very common with children, and it's very natural for children to see spirits and to, you know, my friend's little kid one time, you know, put his hands up for some space to pick him up, you know, instead of putting his hands up for his mother to pick him up, he turned around and put his hands
for a spirit to pick him up
in the doorway, you know, like freaked her out. But, you know, it's very, very natural for children. At some point along the way, we have this like 2,000 years of conditioning that there's something bad about it or something wrong about it, or mediumship or communing with the dead. I mean, the Council of Nicaea was great for sort of setting out the Christian doctrine and telling us that communicating with spirits was wrong. And, you know, we've had nearly 2,000 years, 1,600 years, whatever, of being told, oh no, there's something really bad about this. Whereas in actual fact, having relationships with people in spirit and having ongoing communication with people in spirit is completely and absolutely natural, which is why children don't know they're not supposed to do it. So it's very natural to them, happens to them all the time. And then we get older and then we add in things like literature and movies, and all of a sudden this entire thing just becomes weighed down with sort of wrongdoing and superstition and horror movies. And you know, and it takes the beauty, it really robs us of the opportunity to be able to still communicate and still have relationships with our loved ones that have gone to the spirit world.
Well, I want to talk about the way that society has conditioned us to fear death. And again, not that we want to, I mean, some people want to die, and it's a shame that, you know, that they're fed up here and not getting the most out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of us, and just society in general, sees death as a terrible thing that cuts short lives and harms people because they're dead. And many of us know that, you know, once people are dead, they're saved.
Yes. They have an easier time than us.
They're home. They're going home.
They don't have to pay the rent.
They don't have any financial problems. They don't have any health problems.
No, they don't. Exactly.
And actually, they're home with loved ones.
Yeah.
Who they're very familiar with. And it's really, it's more where home is than here. We just don't know it.
Yeah.
And so for society to think that, you know, the dead have it bad, even if their lives are cut short, if they're young, we also have to appreciate divine order and soul stories that we came into life for.
Yeah.
That we actually, most of the time, I don't know how many deaths are accidental. I can't imagine barely any. I think it was all written to the script before we were born, and we're living it out.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of theories of that, and there's been a lot of lot written about the soul's path, you know, that the soul chooses the path before we are incarnated into the body to be the spirit incarnate.
Right, I believe in that.
Yeah, and so we play out what it is that we have chosen for ourselves to play out over the course of the...
Right.
When it gets into, and it's kind of a tricky thing to talk about on the radio, because it gets into a lot of... it rankles a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, and And a lot of people go, but I can't understand how my six-year-old could have drowned. How could he possibly have chosen that? You know, and it gets into some very, very sensitive and painful areas for people.
I can't figure out why my father at age 50 had a sudden heart attack and died in the middle of, you know, the family just coming into its own and really starting to prosper.
We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know. We don't know why these things happen, you know. And but I think the bigger picture and what's more important is that it's the very basic comment that is only too true, and that is that we actually do not die. And I think when we realize that we do not die, that actually goes a long way towards teaching us how to live. Because I have very, very strong relationships with my loved ones in the spirit. Not all of them, but some of them. My mother, my fiancé in particular. And they are very active and very instrumental in my life.
From the other side.
From the other side. And I thankfully have the benefit of being able to feel and sense and hear them and communicate with them and continue that relationship on a daily basis. And I know that a lot of people don't have that, but I actually feel that if we were able to be still more like children, in other words, if we were able to change the conditioning, and this is a lot of the reason why I'm glad I could come on and talk to you about this today, is that if we can re-educate people on the real nature of life and the afterlife, then we can take away an awful lot of that fear and regret and superstition and guilt and whatever else is going into the pot of, you know, well, either you believe there's no such thing as the afterlife, but it's wrong to try to still talk to my mother, or it's wrong to still want my, you know, I have heard, I can't tell you, Peter, how many superstitions and false beliefs there have been about being able to still maintain relationships with our loved ones.
But there's also a misunderstanding of the other side. For instance, in religions, I remember being at a funeral service for a man who died, and it was a Jewish service, and the rabbi said, well, now we all have to be glad that he's on the other side, resting in the arms of God forever.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, this guy, he was so active, he was so
he's
full of
resting.
Life, resting in the arms of God forever would be a disaster for him.
Well, that is where you said it, because when my mother passed away, they wanted to put RIP in the death notice. And I said, don't put RIP in the death notice.
Right.
You know? And they were like, why? And I said, because if you knew my mother, you would know she's not resting for 1 minute up there. You know. And God love my poor fiancé has been so actively involved in all sorts of just practical things and everything in my life and just sort of helping me get along that I always think, God, the poor guy went off to the spirit world, you know, early, like when he was very young, went off to the spirit world and never got to put his feet up, you know, because then he had to come back and work with me. And I've actually been told, you know, because I trained at the Arthur Findlay College in London. I was there for a couple of years. And one of the tutors at one point said to me, do you know that your fiancé does this work with you? And I said, you know, I actually figured that out, you know, and God love him, you know, he never never got to take a vacation when he got to the spirit world. He sort of was like put on the job immediately.
You know, it's so busy because I once went to a memorial service for a woman who had died, who I knew very well. And I'm at the memorial service and I asked my guides, where is she? Is she here? And they said, no, she's not here and not going to be here. And I said, not here for her own memorial service? Mm. And they said, no, she's really too busy.
Yeah.
She has too many things going on.
Yeah.
And she is going to hear all about it. She's going to know everything and who's there and, you know, probably get a replay. But she didn't feel like she had to be present because there were pressing needs elsewhere.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this is a choice. A lot of it seems to be a choice in the spirit world as well. I know that my mother was very, very close with me. Actually, my mother, you know, because we were in Ireland, and so we have the wake, these big wakes you've probably heard of.
Sure.
And we have them in the house, you know. So my mother was in the coffin downstairs in the parlour, and I was up in the room above her upstairs. And we were actually talking. I mean, she hadn't even gone to the church. And people say, oh, no, it takes months for them to come back to talk to you. But no, believe me, that does not. You know?
No, and I that's where I'm able to communicate with the dead more often is when they're just dead and they're still present. and making a choice to hang around just to be with people. And I had a situation with two family members who were killed in a car crash, and I was in the house where all the grieving was going on, and it was terrible. Everybody was so upset, and so were they. And they were there. I connected with them, and they didn't know what to do with themselves. They had each other, and they just needed to grieve for a while with all of us. They needed to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed with us for, you know, the days that we were grieving. And then they had each other. Mm-hmm. So that really helped.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that whether, regardless, there's a massive change that happens. If somebody dies in whatever that word actually really means, if their body dies.
Well, they were in grief of popping out of their bodies unexpectedly, and especially one of them was a teenager.
Right. The thing is that there's always healing. Healing needs to happen on this side and that side.
Yes.
I mean, there's always healing to be done. And so even if you are mediumistic, even if you're aware of everybody around you all the time, and even if you can have two-way conversations and two-way involvements and all sorts of things with them, the relationship has still changed just because their physical presence is not there, and you still have to grieve that. And then in the spirit world, there is healing and grieving that needs to go on there as well for a variety of different reasons.
Yes.
And so, for instance, people often say, well, it's not right to hold on to them. You're supposed to move on. It drives me crazy, that phrase. Because, for instance, if your mother passes away, right, so your mother's now in the spirit world. If you and your mother were close, your mother, I know not all relationships with mothers are great, but say you have a normal relationship with your mother. A mother is not going to abandon her child. So she's going to go to the spirit world. She's still not going to abandon her child.
Right. She's going to want to help out in any way that
she can.
She's
going to be there the same way. Well, obviously not physically there.
Not the same way that she could help out before. But there are ways that spirits can help that we're not aware of.
Huge ways. You'd be astonished. I've actually been asked to write a screenplay on it for a studio in Los Angeles because of my experiences. But, my mother, for instance, when she got up, my mother's very tenacious, so when she got up to spirit worlds there, she was just, I was like, I knew she's going to be here all the time. And, she lived in Ireland and I live in the States, so I didn't see her all the time. But I knew as soon as she went up to the spirit world, it got to a point where I had to say, okay, eventually I had to say, Mum, I actually need some privacy. You know what I mean? Because I was like, so I think that... there is, and if you have a bad relationship with your mother, I have found in my experience, and this happens at different times in the spirit world, in time being, an arbitrary concept, but where somebody, say, for instance, who had a particularly poor relationship with their mother, where I find that, and this seems to be quite common, we've read about this, I'm sure, but this actually seems to hold true, is that there really does seem to be a life review when they get over there. And some parents, I've seen this, and I've worked with people over periods of time to try to heal relationships with parents who are in the spirit world, where the parent then realizes, realizes what they did. Sometimes they don't even know it. They're not even aware of what they did.
I know an experience like that where a woman was terribly abused by her mother for years and years. Terrible experiences. And thought of her mother as very evil and never would want to ever see her mother again in spirit and all of that. And then found out years later that her mother was showing up trying to help her because her mother felt so guilty and wanted to make up for it.
Yeah. Well, because then that's an opportunity also for the mother to heal and to help heal the daughter.
Yes.
And sometimes I found that, somebody will come to me for a sitting and the mother or whoever is only maybe a year or even, not even in the spirit world. But the mother has already realized, chosen to try to heal herself. Because sometimes people don't realize what they're doing. A lot of the time people don't realize how bad, what they're actually really doing. They don't realize the extent of it. And then the mother will come back to try to help communicate things, to answer the daughter's questions, to try to help the daughter find some resolution.
So many people live unconsciously.
Absolutely, yeah. And so sometimes it takes 15 years for the mother to realize what she's done, and sometimes it's very quick, but it's just all in its own time. But the healing, what happens there is, that the fact that we do not die and the fact that there is this communication is possible. And you don't have to be a medium. I do whole workshops on this at the Edgar Cayce Center on ways to actually continue having bonds and to continue forming those bonds with loved ones in the spirit world, is that it is possible if we can get outside our limited thinking that we're here and then we go into the light or someplace else and we buy into the superstitions about the afterlife. If we can kind of dispense with all of that and actually look at it in a much more sort of 21st century sort of way and a much more expansive sort of way, we can see that if we just acknowledge and appreciate and accept that we do not die and that consciousness incarnate and discarnate is the same thing except for the physicality of it, that the healing that can happen in between the mother and daughter or any whoever, there's so much potential for healing there and to sort of undo and to help heal wounds that were created that we are robbed of if we believe that somebody dies or if we believe that they die and we're not supposed to try to communicate with them.
Right. Well, actually, I think that our consciousness is evolving on this plane that we're on.
Yeah.
And I think at the same time, consciousness is also evolving out there. And they're all learning more and more. Yeah. We're learning more and more. It's not stagnant out there.
Not sure.
So they're growing. And from what I'm understanding, that there's a lot more scientists who maybe have passed on from here and are out there with advanced knowledge that are starting to work more on being able to get the other side to connect more easily with this side in material ways, being able to manufacture things to happen on this plane. Because let's say we die and we want to send a message to a loved one after we die in ways that are material, and yet when we're out there, we're not that smart about all that. But there are teams that will say, we can help you.
Yeah, the same way as they are here. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I really do believe my experience of the afterlife. I mean, I've at this point, as you well know, communicated with thousands of people, for people here to try to help them out whatever way, one way or the other. That what I can say is that the more I communicate with people in the spirit world, the more similar it looks to this world. You know, at least to what the consciousness and to the spirit level in this world is the same. You know, obviously, you know, the parameters, the sensory perception, the physicality is all very, very different.
Very.
But the spirit and the consciousness is the same, largely.
I wonder, it must be hard to get used to not having to breathe.
Yeah, not having to be in a body at all, having to walk from place to place.
And actually to be able to see through a third eye rather than through physical eyes.
Mm.
And the material limitations out there don't exist. So we don't have to worry about shelter. We don't have to worry about food or health.
Of course, the social issue.
It's hard to get used to that out there.
I'm sure. But, you know, and this is why they say it's easier quite often to communicate with our loved ones. You know, most people who come to courses and stuff with me say, well, when so-and-so died first, you know, I was really, when my father went first, I was very aware of him very strongly for a few months, and now I'm not at all. And really what that seems to be, like you said, is that initially the transition from the awareness of, well, I have this sort of etheric body, which is kind of like a, you know, it's an etheric body
that
mimics.
You try to emulate it.
Yeah,
yes.
You're emulating a physical body. And that sort of falls away over time as we, you know, there's less of a need for it.
You morph more into that higher
consciousness. You become more of your consciousness. And so the density of your energy signature, it's not as dense. So there's a more of a distance in terms of the energy, not distance physically. It's not distance geographically. It's just the energy signature is more different.
Different vibratorily.
So your dad is still there.
Right.
It's just that your physicality is denser, so you're just not as aware of him as he gets lighter. Unless you're like a medium, in which case that's what we do, is to adjust vibrationally to be able to match that, you know. But I still find that I still share the same experience. It's still much easier. It's very, very, very present. It's almost palatable initially. And it gets to be a little bit more work later on, you know. So, I mean, I experienced that myself. But the thing to take away from it is that your father, if he was here 6 months ago, I can guarantee you he's still here. And
sure.
He's still going to check in. And if you you know,
and that's why my father came to my son's wedding a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
In Mexico, and he just showed up. His guides told me he came to break bread, but he's been gone for 56 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long time, and yet he's still coming to his grandson's wedding.
This is what I'm saying, and this is what I would, you know, which is why I try so hard to really write about these things and to talk about these things, mm-hmm. because, you know, how sad would it be if you weren't aware of that because you
right.
believed that
I'm
there was
so
something
glad that I was
it.
Aware of it.
Yeah.
Now, we have to come to the end of the show, and you're going to be giving a talk at the ARE Center.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will air in time for people to go.
Yeah.
When is it?
On July 28th, we're going to do a benefit for the ARE, and it's actually a 2.5-hour, 15-minute workshop. So I'm going to talk about these issues more. We'll do a Q&A. What I'm also going to do in the last 30 to 45 minutes is an induced communication so that everybody in the room, I'll get them into the sort of alpha and gamma state to be able to make
great.
A direct contact with their own loved one
that
in the spirit
great.
World.
And how can people reach you?
Well, my website is celticmedium.com, and if they want to know more about the benefit, they can go there or just go to the Edgar Cayce Center, edgarcaycenyc.org.
Karen Francis, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you very much, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening. Thank you.